Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Radiolab. I'm Robert Krulwich.
I'm Jad Abumrad.
And this hour, I'm going to curse you, Jad. I'm going to ask you to just simply do this following thing. You know that song that we both hate?
Which one? God, it's like the moment you start that.
Keep going. Can you sing it? There are some songs that I can stick into your head and they just won't leave. There's somebody, poor Suzanne, who got this song somehow stuck in her head. And then there's songs that just won't go away because you didn't even invite them and they stay. This is an hour on the music in our heads. Where does the songs come from? Why do they stay? A whole hour without Suzanne Vega.
Thankfully.
On Radiolab.
Let me ask you a question there to get us started here. When a song gets stuck in your head, do you have one in there right now by any chance?
Oliver. The Broadway show tune.
Of course. What does it sound like when it's in there?
What does it sound like?
Yeah.
Oh.
No, but just think, before you answer, just think, what does it really sound like? Describe it musically.
It's funny that you mentioned this. It doesn't actually, I don't hear any musicians.
Like, is it loud?
No, it's nothing. It's not loud.
Does it have a location?
No.
Timbre?
No, it just has a melody, a vague, foggy...
Like a shadowy melody,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, well, so that's our starting point. You know, most of us get a song in our head, it's kind of like what you described, vague. But there are people who, when they get songs stuck in their head, it's a whole different experience. It is not vague. In fact, they wish it were vague. They wish it were a shadow. And you'll know what I mean in a second. Let me introduce you to someone.
Mary had a little lamb, little lamb. Little lamb.
Always has songs running through his head.
Everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
He's plagued by them, actually. And he spoke with our producer, Lulu Miller.
And so that was going through your head just now, or?
That's right. Mary had a little lamb. Over and over again.
You know, let me have you just introduce yourself really quick.
Oh, my name is Leo Rangel, and I'm not young. I just had my 94th birthday. I've been in L.A. since I was in the war, World War II.
Leo's a psychoanalyst.
Oh, yeah. I'm still in practice.
So he finds everything that's been going on in his own head sort of intriguing, like from a professional standpoint.
I'm trying to think, what the hell am I doing?
Anyway, this whole thing started for him about 12 years ago. He just had major heart surgery, and he wakes up in his hospital bed.
Oh, I wake up in the ICU, and almost as soon as I'm conscious, outside my hospital window, I hear music. And it was distant. It sounded funereal, like hymns. I hear these songs. I look out the window. I think, geez, a rabbi is out there. I say to my kids, I casually say, hey, there's a rabbi out there singing. They said, what do you mean? So I said, there must be a rabbi school, and he must be teaching young people how to be rabbis. And the kids looked at each other.
Because they weren't hearing anything. But at that moment, that didn't matter to Leo because the music was so loud and vivid to him, so totally coming through that window that...
I dismissed them as, oh, well, they could have their opinion if they want. I didn't think anything of it. And then the rest of the week in the hospital, you know, I'm getting better and better. And as I get better, the music changes. I start being a more perky. And the songs, the music out the window changes to Chattanooga Choo Choo. Chattanooga Choo Choo. Chattanooga Choo Choo. Won't you choo choo me? Well, 1 a.m, 2 a.m, I'm waking up with these songs.
Always coming in from right outside that window.
Then I thought, geez, there's a pretty energetic group there across the street.
At this point, Leo was beginning to suspect that something a little weird was going on.
But the real coup de grace came when I was going to leave the hospital after a week or so. Mm-hmm. And this tune, I didn't know the words at first, but I started to hear da 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 da
da da da da da da da da da. And as he packed up, signed out of the hospital, and got into his car,
I was reflecting.
That's when it hit him.
I still was hearing the song.
The song was still coming from outside a window, but now the scenery was moving.
I thought it was related to the hospital and to the thing across the street. Here I am, in the car, listening to this.
And that's when the lyrics appeared.
Finally the words come, when Johnny goes marching home again, hurrah, hurrah.
He couldn't ignore it anymore. Not only was the song following him home, it's like the song was about him. He was the Johnny.
The girls will cheer.
Marching home, coming home from the hospital.
I realized, I am listening to me. I am listening to me.
Okay, is he really though? I mean, is he really listening to anything? Or does he just think he's hearing something?
Well, there's nothing out there for him to hear.
Right,
so.
But from the inside, like, is his brain actually hearing music? Well, lucky for us, there's a professor in England who had the exact same question. I called him up.
Hello.
Hi, can I speak to Professor Griffith, please?
Speaking.
Tim Griffith is his name. He is a professor of cognitive neurology at Newcastle University. Here's what he did. He took 35 people who were like Leo, who claimed to be hallucinating music.
Yeah.
And he scanned their brains.
Very simple experiment. I just put people in a scanner and said, what are you hearing now? What are you hearing now?
And when they told him, there. There, I'm hearing music. At that moment, he would snap a picture of their brain.
Right.
Then he took a different group of people who have no hallucinations, played them real music.
Actual music.
Scanned their brains, and then he compared the pictures.
And if you look...
They looked virtually identical.
You know, if you were to put those in front of me and say, one's people hallucinating, the other's people being played music, I wouldn't be able to tell you which was which.
Which tells you two things. First, this condition is real. These people are not making it up. And second, this goes way beyond the ordinary experience the rest of us have where we get a song stuck in our head. These people are getting the full hi-fi experience of listening to music. Their entire brain is lit up.
The music sounds so convincingly like real-life music. What are you to think when it suddenly appears?
That's Diana Deutsch, a psychologist at the University of California, San Diego, who's been collecting emails from hundreds of different people who hallucinate music.
One person described it in the following way. He said, imagine that you were at a rock concert standing right by a loudspeaker. Well, it's louder than that.
At the beginning, when I didn't know what was going to happen, I thought it was going to take over my mind. It started interfering with sleep. It's the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe. Like all night.
Oh.
And I got mad. I used to say, stop it already. Stop it. Cut it out. Come on, enough, enough, enough. But you're never free. I thought I'd never sleep again. That was the low point. I thought, I've got to get help for this.
At what point did you bring it up with doctors?
Oh, the doctors were completely impotent. To this day, they roll their eyes when I tell them about it.
One doctor told him that maybe it was the fillings in his teeth picking up the radio.
Okay, I hoped it was.
Right.
But it wasn't. It continued forever.
Nothing he could do could make it stop.
I don't have an off button.
It's like there was a jukebox in his head run by an evil gremlin. And the worst part? The gremlin would mess with the tempo.
Like... okay, the man on the flying trapeze.
This daring young man on the flying trapeze.
Then it starts speeding up. That's the worst. When that started to happen, I really was getting close to panic. I had the feeling that it could go at its rate and I couldn't stop it. It's like you're on a galloping horse and the horse is running away with you. I once told that to my daughter and she said, Dad, why don't you just instead think of the song Silent Night. And I could control the tempo and instead, when that was galloping, I would go Silent Night. And immediately I'm completely relaxed.
All is well.
And the gallop is completely gone. And I could even let it come back and it would start now being. And that was no longer ever a problem of the tempo running away with me.
Okay, so let's just assume that Leo is not crazy.
I never thought I was psychotic. Never, never.
Because most people, it turns out, with this condition are not crazy.
There's nothing else wrong with them.
According to Diana Deutsch. So then the question becomes, how can a person who is otherwise sane hallucinate to such a crazy degree? Well, in the 60s, there was a Polish psychologist named Jerzy Konorski who thought about this. And he came up with a simple, kind of beautiful idea based on an assumption that he couldn't prove yet, which was that between the ears and the brain, there are some connections, he thought, just a few stray connections that run backwards, brain back to ear, which would allow sound to run in reverse. Now, this was just an idea. He couldn't really test it. But many years later, neuroscientists like Tim Griffith start to poke around in the brain. They start to explore. And what they find is that he was right.
Yeah.
Very right.
If you look at the pathway between the ears and the brain, probably about 70% of the fibers don't actually go up. They go down. They go the other way towards the ears.
70% go up?
70% go from the brain to the ears.
Yeah.
It's like our ears are literally wired to hear our brains. Now, Konorski's idea was that normally our ears wouldn't hear what the brain was saying because it was too busy taking in all the sounds from the outside. But what if, he thought, the sound from the outside stopped? Maybe then there would be a kind of backflow. The sound stored in your brain would start to flow backwards. Now again, this is just an idea, but there might be something to this because it would explain why most of the people who suffer from musical hallucinations, according to Tim Griffith, have one thing in common.
By far and away, the commonest situation you see it in is in people who have deafness, usually in middle or later life.
And you don't have to take his word for it.
Nearly the instant that I went deaf, I started experiencing round-the-clock, 24/7, auditory hallucinations.
This is Michael Korost. When he was 36, he lost all of his hearing, and he remembers the moment it happened. He was in the emergency room talking to a nurse, and suddenly the sound started to go.
It was like going from talking like this to talking like this to talking like this to talking like this. My ears were just draining out, like water draining out of a bathtub. I was just getting deafer and deafer and deafer. And at the same time, I was starting to hear a very loud ringing sound in my ears. It was gradually morphing into sort of formless, eerie, ethereal music. Music of the spheres, really, I would call it. And it would slowly morph. Into some version of the Ave Maria. It was almost as if, as a sort of recompense to being deaf, I was like plugged into some sort of deep background melody of the cosmos.
Now here's the question. What would happen if Michael suddenly got his hearing back? Well, a couple of months later, Michael got a cochlear implant installed. This is a little chip that's put into his brain, which promised to return at least part of his hearing. And he says when the doctors turned it on,
The moment,
he says, they turned it on, the sounds from the world came rushing in, and the music stopped.
Stopped cold. Just went away almost instantaneously.
There you go.
Well, but I happen to know a woman who had a very, very different experience.
What do you mean?
She had the same problem. She went deaf. She started hearing music.
What kind of music was it?
Hymns, spirituals, patriotic songs.
This is not actually her real name. It's Cheryl C. is what we're going to call her. She wanted the music in her head to stop, and she'd heard about a patient, like your friend there,
who had musical hallucinations, received a cochlear implant, and her hallucinations disappeared. So I wanted to do it.
So she did it. She got the implant. She wakes up on the operating table. And?
I heard the music. It was inside me.
Still there.
Just was there. I can't stop it.
Why in the first case and they're kind of the same situation.
They are very much the same.
Why would there be that difference?
I don't know why there is this difference between them. So I asked Dr. Oliver Sacks, who we often talk to on these questions.
How do you explain the difference? As a physician, one sees patients, you ask about their symptoms, they produce their symptoms, but it is equally important to see the relation of the symptoms of the disease to the person themselves, to their identity.
He's discovered over the years that the problem as expressed in the patient is partly a disease. I mean, the person is sick or in trouble in some way. At the same time, the disease is reflecting something about the person in front of him.
One sees interaction and a liaison, a collusion, a collision, I don't know what word to use, between the self and a symptom.
And sometimes it can come out so strangely. For example, there's a patient he has who was a Jewish kid.
He was a Jewish boy who'd grown up in Hamburg in the 1920s and 1930s, and he had been terrified by the Nazi youth.
And for some horrible reason,
he hallucinated Nazi marching songs.
He was
tormented.
But on the other hand, Oliver told me about an old woman he once met in a nursing home who was haunted by lullabies.
One after the other, nonstop.
But see, she was an orphan.
Her father died before she was born and her mother before she was five. Orphaned, alone.
She found the songs in her head deeply comforting.
The music and the hallucinations, in fact, seemed to be a door into a lost part of childhood.
So then the differences between people, when music floods into their head, what's going on, says Oliver, is the disease and the person, they're talking to each other.
The self can be molded by hallucination, but it can mold them in turn.
I wonder where Leo fits into this. Lulu?
Yeah.
How would you say that Leo self interacts with his symptoms or vice versa?
Well, he's a psychoanalyst. So whenever he gets a song stuck in his head, which is like all the time, he analyzes it. He looks for a hidden meaning in it.
Like, you know, the way dreams reveal your inner life. The same thing with songs.
Leo will tell you that every song is a message from his subconscious.
Everything has an unconscious connection, pleasant or unpleasant.
And he's just got to figure out what it is.
I'm analyzing me like I have a patient in front of me.
Like when I first called him up, he had Mary Had a Little Lamb stuck in his head. That, he told me, was because he'd been thinking about
the passivity of the American people in following a leader that misleads them. And everywhere that Mary went, the lambs were sure to go. I mean, and the connection is obvious.
Or when he first got home from the hospital, he always had America the Beautiful stuck in his head.
And I'm certainly not a raving patriot, but what this meant was home, sweet home. America to me was home.
Okay, it's easy to think that this is kind of a stretch. I mean, every song has some very specific meaning for him. But I don't know, there was this one time he told me about where he woke up with a song in his head.
I start going to brush my teeth. I'm singing along as I go to the bathroom.
He didn't know why.
And this is what it was.
It was just a few years after his wife had died.
My bunny lies over the ocean. My bunny lies over the sea. My bunny lies over the ocean. Da 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 da. Bring back my bunny to me. You know? And, I realized when I thought, why am I singing that song? And then suddenly I realized it was our wedding anniversary that week. It was one of our major anniversaries. You know, that song can kill me when I hear it.
Even so, he told me that when that song comes, he doesn't want it to go.
I found that when the song disappeared, I didn't want it to disappear.
It's now been over a decade of hallucinating music for Leo. And he found that at some point, the music switched. It went from intruder to friend.
Da, 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 da.
Now he looks forward to the songs.
Stars and steel guitars.
They keep him company. Because often he finds himself alone.
In Monterey. It's true that one of the things about being 94 is that when you look at your telephone address book, half of them are not there anymore. You scratch out the name. And that's not easy. Da, da, da. Just Molly and me. And baby makes three. all happy in my blue heaven.
Radiolab's Lulu Miller. Thanks, Lulu.
Yeah, thanks to Leo.
Leo has a book out about living with musical hallucinations. It's called Music in the Head, Living at the Brain-Mind Border. And so does Michael Korost. He's the guy with the cochlear implant. His book is called Rebuilt, My Journey Back to the Hearing World. You can find links to all of those on our website, radiolab.org.
And special thanks to Oliver Sacks, who basically gave us his Rolodex, and we were able to find all these people and interview them all, thanks to Oliver and Kate Edgar, his assistant.
Absolutely. Now, Robert, before we go to break, I just want to play one more clip, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. Couldn't figure out a place to put it. It was from my interview with Diana Deutsch. I was asking her about musical hallucinations and where this stuff comes from. Like, where does the music come from? What triggers it? And she told me, basically, well, it can be anything.
A striking example was somebody who wanted very much for her hallucinations to go away, and suddenly they did go away. And so she said, oh, great, this is the sound of silence. And immediately the song, The Sound of Silence.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Simon and Garfunkel song started.
I've come to talk with
so,
you again.
What a torture.
Touch the sound.
Radiolab will continue in a moment.
Radiolab is funded in part by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and the National Science Foundation.
Radiolab is produced by WNYC, New York Public Radio, and distributed by NPR, National Public Radio.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.